This week on the line, we are welcoming Nate Appelman. Nate and I have a 25-year culinary heritage that we are going to spill the beans on.
You know him as a James Beard Award winner for A16 and his cookbooks, then his incredibly surprising turn as the Chipotle executive chef.
Nate was one of the first chefs to take a corporate job helping usher Chipotle into the modern era and gaining culinary respect for the burrito behemoth. Nate is an extraordinary chef. He's a man that I've learned so much from. I still reference his cookbook whenever I'm looking for a great Italian, Southern Italian recipe.
Our dear friend, Chef Nate Appelman, is here to inspire us as always. Listen in.
Hey, my name is Daniel Holzman.
And I'm Amanda Freitag.
And this is On the Line. Every week we bring illustrious guests, friends, family, co-workers, philanthropists.
Chefs, artists.
I was just trying to alliterate. All right. Nate
That's
Appelman.
Me.
And today, Nate Appelman's here.
I'm here on the line.
You're on the line.
The greatest podcast I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Ever. We're going to win a Webby or whatever that's called.
On the internet.
What's our website?
I'm sure we'll cover this, but Daniel is, you know, Oliver's godfather, right?
I didn't know that.
He's like, I emailed him, and I was like, Oliver, check your email. And he's like, I didn't get an email. And he's like, I got a text from Daniel. I was like, this guy's such a grandpa. So old.
Yeah.
No. So old.
I embrace the technology.
We're going off the rails already.
We can.
I embrace
the technology
of yeast. The wheel and inclined plane.
He really seriously was promoting Danny Boys the other day and literally said
www.http://dannyboyspizza.com.
Like, nobody says that anymore. No one.
The other day someone asked me to tell my email and I went Hotel Oscar Lima Zulu Mike Alpha November at gmail.com and they read it back and they had written Hotel Oscar. I was like, okay. Nate Appelman started his long and storied career as a chef, restaurant owner, television personality in his home state of Ohio.
Wow.
Before attending the Culinary Institute of America in upstate New York, where we met.
That's right.
Is that young, where you met?
Yeah. As a young man.
We have a good
long
story.
And storied.
I was just there.
It was fate.
Kismet. Boy. Not the restaurant.
We're in the same group?
He cut his teeth in some of the country's top restaurants, including time in Napa Valley working for Michael Chiarello.
Yeah.
Who is...
R.I.P.
R.I.P. In 2000-something, Nate opened A16 in San Francisco's Marina District.
2004.
A16 was a massive hit. The restaurant was a spectacular, successful... I didn't really proofread this, but it was one of the first upscale pizza pasta joints with an incredible wine list, and the restaurant helped redefine the modern era of Italian cuisine. Was one of the first restaurants to highlight an individual region of the country, of Italy, before the Italian restaurants that were just Italian restaurants before that. And nobody talked about where in Italy. That was a really special and unique and definitive thing. Right?
It was a long time ago.
Wait a second.
2004.
The restaurant was made for our generation. Throw away the tablecloth and put your money on the plate. Great music, great food, amazing energy. It was something genuinely special to be part of. Thank you for that. You opened another Italian restaurant in San Francisco with, he partnered with this incredible chef. They opened this Roman Osteria that was a spectacular.
What chef and, was that?
They got the chef was Daniel Holzman.
Oh, right. Okay. Thank you for clarifying, yep. Nate.
After A16, they moved to New York City and opened Polino's.
Correct.
Which was another great Italian restaurant.
I thought so.
Italian restaurant. It was bigger, big space.
Maybe before its time, you could say.
I think it was before its time.
Why do you say that?
I agree.
We can touch on it, but I want to hear what else you got.
So, listen. And after Polino's, Nate took a job, worked for Chipotle, right?
Chipotle Mexican Grill.
And at the time, fancy chefs didn't take jobs at chain restaurants like that. This is how I say it. I said, it was a little bit shocking. I think it was a little shocking. And not that it's anybody's business what you choose to do with your life. And I think Nate is a very confident man who will tell you to fuck off if you pass judgment on him. So he's the first person to let you know that it's none of your goddamn business. However, here was a super successful chef, successful TV personality, celebrated chef that could do anything you wanted to do. And everything was going well. It wasn't like there was, oh my God, I have to like do some other thing. And then you did something that was very unexpected. And I think it was very inspirational for people. And I've known you for like 27 years. So I can say that you were defined by your confidence and that you're willing to find your own path and forge your own way. And for so many of us, we follow a path that's like of the path of least resistance. I'm scared to follow what I think I should do. I kind of want to do what other people think I should do. I think a lot of us are that way. And you kind of said, hey, being a restaurant chef is kind of a shitty job right now.
And again, ahead of its time.
And I don't want to do that. And I have a family who I love, and I want to learn to do something different. And it was kind of like a pro athlete deciding to pursue a career other than sports. It just like doesn't happen that often. And so because of that, I think it gave people a lot of confidence to consider an alternate path and that you could be passionate about food and do something different and that you can find a different way. And that most importantly, like feeding people in a restaurant, you only feed however many people. But, you know, there are ways to, if you really want to change the food scene, really want to have an impact, there are ways that you can impact so many more people. And how small the restaurant world is compared to how many people have to eat. Mm-hmm. So that was a big deal. And you retained the respect of all your colleagues, which was another big piece of the puzzle. Because at the time, it was like, yo, I'm doing this job. Fuck everybody. Maybe they're not, you know, not going to understand or respect it. But it was actually, everybody did. It
took a minute.
Yeah.
It took a minute.
And I felt jealous at times. Running the restaurants can be rewarding, but it's a grind. So thank you for helping forge that path and being here today and, you know, and being a man that's true to yourself.
Nate Appleman, everybody.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate that. And it sounds great. But I don't want that to define me because today is today and tomorrow is tomorrow. And I'm looking ahead.
Yep.
And that was in the past. I mean, thank you for, you know, acknowledging some things that I may or may have done, you know, for our industry, for the food system. But at the same time, I'm just getting started.
Yeah. No, and that's what we love about you. And that's what your history shows, that you haven't been afraid to change things, do things differently, do things outside the box, watch what chefs are doing and say, I don't want to do that. I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And I think that changed a lot for everybody in our industry that were watching you. Whether you like it or not, people watch you, right? And they get inspired by you.
Yeah. I understand that, but I do want to clarify a few things. Like, I left that chef job, right? I left it. But it wasn't for laziness because, you know, I am more passionate about food. I'm more passionate about the food system than anything. You know, when my son was two, Oliver, he almost died.
Yes.
And that rocked my world. I missed the first 2 years of his life because I was building a career, opening restaurants with that guy, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I missed it, and he almost died. Yesterday, he turned 17.
Woohoo, Oliver!
And so, you know, I spent the last 15 years being his best friend, his mentor, his protector, right?
His friend.
His friend.
Yeah.
And he has people like this guy who's his godfather, right? And gave him his first job at Danny Boy's Pizza.
I heard Oliver was making pizza recently.
Talented young man.
Of course. Apple doesn't fall far.
That was not bad. But he can wash dishes as well, not just making pizza. He's a hardworking young man.
Well, he got a new job. He starts Saturday, so let's see.
How?
He's scooping gelato.
Nice.
I only wanted him to work there for my own selfish reasons.
I was just going to say, hope it's a free gelato place. Free,
but also, I always felt like you scoop ice cream. That's how you get the babes.
That's right.
The babes.
Where are you from again?
I don't know, when you're 16 or 17, you get the babes scooping ice cream. Yeah.
But okay, but again, you were trendsetting, thinking about quality of life, which we were just talking to Elizabeth Faulkner, and she did a documentary during COVID about, sorry, we're closed. It's just, you know, all these restaurants closing, and that the culture changed after that. Restaurant culture, sacrifice of chefs, you know, saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to spend my whole life in this restaurant. I have a family, I have other things I want to do. And that was only 4 years ago.
Right.
you know, and you thought about this way before that.
Yeah. I started at Chipotle in 2010. I'm no longer with them, but it was such a special time in my life. But you just reminded me about setting trends or not following trends, right? When I was 17 years old, back in 1996, is that when we were 17? I started getting tattooed. Right.
Yeah.
I remember walking into my kitchen job and they said that, and the manager stopped me and looked at me and she's like, "You cannot work in kitchens with tattoos."
Come on.
No, this was 1996.
Now it's a requirement. You have to have a tattoo to be
right?
in the kitchen.
And so I think you said it best. I mean, maybe it's a little bit of fuck off. You know, I'm a middle child. So,
yeah,
you know, that's where I sit. but at the same time, I just did what I wanted. Right.
Did you get that job?
I continue to work because I'm a hard worker.
Yeah.
I could wash dishes better than
anyone. Didn't matter whatever tattoo you had on your hand, your arm, whatever.
She got over it.
Wow. Fast.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I remember when I first met you, I was shocked by the tattoos.
See?
Really?
I was really shocked by the tattoos. I was like, because I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it at all. And it took me a while to, you don't notice it after a while. But still to this day, when people meet you, I'm sure they're like, It's a thing. And it's less of a thing today, but it's still a thing.
No, it's still a thing. I mean, I have a new accountant. I walked into her office last week, and it was like after hours, and I had an appointment.
She was like, checking account.
You know, grabbing her purse. I was like, what's going
clutching
on
her
here?
Pearls.
Yeah.
I mean, as we all know,
that's the world we live
tattoo,
in.
The
right?
knife tattoo, that's, the chefs yeah. are all tattooed. And
like, that translated to everything I did.
Yeah,
right? I think people weren't really focused on Italian food back in 2004.
No, absolutely.
And, you know, I was with a group of partners that we found that region of Italy called Campania. We called it A16 because it was the highway that ran through the entire region, right? And we focused solely on that region, starting with Neapolitan pizza, but also going into the areas that nobody had ever traveled. You know, the world back then wasn't like it is today. It was 20 years ago.
Yep.
And people have more access and more availability and more want and desire to go to these places.
Nobody was focusing
regionally. He called his travel agent, actually. Called American Express, got American Express travel checks. Wrote down the phone numbers in his phone book.
Yeah.
I remember but nobody going was to, focusing oh regionally remember, on Italian cuisine.
Do you remember
nobody.
Looking for the Hotel de Ville? And getting into a fight about the Hotel de Centro de Ville in Italy?
Yes. You know, time we were in Campania, Daniel and I, and we just showed up. I don't even know if we booked hotels, did we? I don't know.
Yeah, we were driving for it
was
the
this
Hotel
R&D? Let's just talk to R&D. Our listener, tell them
we
research
filled, the car was filled with Cacciocavallo and
truffles.
It stank and it was amazing. And we go to the Hotel
cheese
de
and
Centro.
Truffles.
Hotel Centre de Ville, it says. We're like looking, and there are these signs. Hotel Centre de Ville. Centre de Ville. Centre de Ville. So we follow the sign, and when we keep on going in a circle. We passed it like 9 times. We're furious. There's no GPS, no anything. Centre de Ville means center of town. We've been following signs that are taking us to the center of town, passing the center of town, and then following the signs back around. Yeah.
And you know, Daniel was on one of those trips, right? And we drove the entire A16 through Campania, going to the small towns, finding the little things like macarinara, that pasta that nobody was doing.
The horse butcher. Oh, it was great.
Yeah. The horse butcher.
I got a shave next to the horse butcher, and when I was done with my shave, the guy put a cigarette in my mouth and lit it. I didn't smoke. I was like, this is living Italy.
And you know, I was very fortunate to work with great partners and great friends, really, because, you know, that was my launching pad. That's, you know, Food & Wine Best New Chef.
Yes.
From the day I turned 18, I saw that magazine, and I was like, I want to be one of those people. That was my goal.
Yeah.
And I got it, and I was like, okay.
What's next?
Yeah, what's next?
As soon as you get that, what's next?
James Beard Award, right? Cookbook of the Year. I was like, thought I was on top of the world. And then it crumbles when your son almost dies, and then you realize what's important. And so, yeah, making that change wasn't about anybody else. It wasn't about making money. It wasn't about, you know, not working as hard. It was about being there for my son.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. I think that's crucial, and I think that, again, you did that when nobody else was doing that. When everybody's like, I'm a chef, that's the sacrifice I make. I was still
trying to get laid.
That's
I
it.
Couldn't do that. I didn't have a son.
You were trying to make one.
I was working
But
on.
Then let's talk about community, because this is really important to me, because sometimes I think it's lost, but Dan reminds me that it's not lost. But when Oliver was sick, you tapped into your community of chefs and said, I'm going to be on this foundation. I'm going to raise money for this disease, and I'm going to be that deep into it.
Yeah, and also fortuitous, right? I was on Chopped. It was the first Chopped All-Stars, and it was for charity. It was $50,000, and you could pick a charity you wanted. My son had Kawasaki disease, and at that time, there was this little foundation in outside of Boston. And imagine, I won $50,000, and imagine that company, that little, it was actually an individual who was doing it out of his house, getting a call and being like, hey, we're sending you $50,000.
Unreal.
And that $50,000 not only started me on my path of like finding not only answers for Kawasaki disease for myself and for, you know, selfish reasons for my son, but it was more than that. It was, you know, because of that, I joined the foundation, that little foundation, and we took it bigger and bigger. We started doing events. That's how I ended up living in San Diego, because all the main research for that disease is done in San Diego, and we raised tons of money, right? And we gave them the money, and it funded research for many, many years that are helping kids today. And once again, fortuitous, because during COVID, there was a huge spike of Kawasaki disease.
Really?
Yeah, and it became more well-known, which was unfortunate, but great at the same time.
That's so interesting.
On the Line podcast is brought to you by Danny Boy's Famous Original Pizza. From downtown Los Angeles and Westwood, Los Angeles, Danny Boy's Pizza started with a singular goal of producing the best slice of pizza that we could possibly create. We make New York-style pizza with the finest ingredients, built by a team of fun-loving, like-minded, culinary-driven individuals, producing slices of pizza that are not going to empty your wallet, but they will fill your belly. Come down to Danny Boy's and say hi. I am on the line, cooking them up for you, as well as on the line with Amanda Freitag here in the studio for you.
That's so scary.
Yeah. So.
Okay, so Oliver, 17 years old.
You sound like such a good person.
I mean, I try to be.
You sound really like a good person.
Can I remind everybody, as you said that, to donate blood and plasma on a regular basis?
Yes.
Yeah. You grow it back. It's not a...
Yeah.
You grow it back like a limb.
You've got an unlimited amount. You just can keep on giving.
I love that you remind people of that. And I see that on your social when you donate blood. And I think that's really important because we don't even think about that.
And, you know, the world needs it.
The world needs it. And, okay... We won't talk too much about Chipotle, but we will talk a little bit about it because I got to spend a lot of time with you during that time.
Yeah, that's right.
Because you did these festivals around the country called Cultivate. And again, that was so unique because it was food and music, and it was mostly music.
And farmers. And education.
And it was free.
It was. We had big bands. Portugal and the Man was there one year.
That's how I became friendly with those guys. Yeah. Like that, I found out that we had a mutual fandom.
Yeah, Cultivate was like a Lollapalooza based on food, farming, and music.
Anybody who ever went to a Cultivate who's listening knows how much fun it was. The incredible bands, chefs on stage doing demos, food everywhere, farmers everywhere in all different cities. And we did San Francisco, we did Chicago, Kansas City,
Denver,
Arizona, Denver, Dallas. Snowing. John and Vinny were there for that one, I think.
That's right.
Dallas, you know, we got to do these really amazing events, and I became a part of, you know,
that
team.
That Chipotle family.
Yes.
And, you know, Chipotle was a special place for me. I worked directly for Steve Ells for 7 years.
That's incredible. Who else can really say that? I mean, you got to really know that man.
There were only three people who reported to him in the company.
Yep.
And I was one of them, and it was so special. And, you know, sitting and listening to that man talk, I think taught me how to think.
Yeah. What was your biggest takeaway from him? Because he was unique.
He was very unique.
Straightforward.
And once again, somebody, I think we match very well because he was somebody who didn't do focus groups.
Right.
He didn't necessarily care what the larger audience wanted, even though he was feeding the larger audience.
Yeah.
You know, he did what he wanted.
But he had a bigger idea.
Yeah, he had a bigger plan. Just like Steve Jobs. Just like, you know, a lot of founders out there who want to do bigger and better. He was that guy, and he kept refining it every single year and making it better and making it better. And now he's no longer with the company, but the company is worth $80 billion. Wow.
That's
not insane. Many people can start from one restaurant and build it to an $80 billion company.
No. I don't think so. Who else has done that?
Kudos to him. And it was the greatest time of my life. Those first 7 years, we were developing concepts. We were changing the food system. I worked in a Chipotle. For 6 months, I was a general manager for Chipotle. And the whole reason why people ended up finding out about me working at Chipotle.
They saw you there?
No. Yeah. A writer for the New York Times, Oliver Strand, if you're listening out there, came in for a burrito one day.
No way.
Yeah. And he was like, what are you doing? He's like, and he started looking around for like cameras.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. Welcome to Chipotle. How may I help you? And
what do you want in your bowl?
Yeah. Next week, I was on the front page of the New York Times dining section, talking about being at Chipotle. And I realized that that gave me a platform to be able to talk about things like Kawasaki disease, to talk about things that are important to me. And I keep finding those things every single day, and I seek them out because I'm no longer stuck in one kitchen or two kitchens or three kitchens, with your hand down the drain. How many toilets have you cleaned out, right? How many doors have you had to
fill? Like this week?
Yeah, but what do
this week?
I mean, you happen to be good at that, right? Well, I'm not.
It's my favorite part of the job. Yeah.
I mean, I know how to fix an oven. And
latrine maintenance has always been a highlight of this area.
We all do, but is it your specialty?
No.
And what I've realized as I continue to evolve and grow is I shed the things that don't offer me the opportunity to focus on the things that are important to me.
Right.
That's smart. That includes people around me. It includes things like social media breaks.
I wish I could do that.
Restaurants, it's diet, it's health, which I'm sure we'll get into some health here in a bit.
Yes.
But that's
Can I ask, I got to back up because this is something like I've always admired. If from the outside, it doesn't look like you second guess yourself at all. You have this like weird confidence to just forge forward. And somehow, even when you make a mistake or go in a direction that's like you need to change, it's like unwavering. It's like you just kind of shift direction and keep on going. And I don't understand.
I could break it down for you right now in one sentence. What you just said was, if I make a mistake, I pivot. Difference is, I don't look at it as a mistake. I look at it as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that took me many, 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 many years to understand.
Yeah.
Right? Because, we grew up in kitchens. It's solely focused on what's on the plate. Like, barely. And we cooked in the 90s. Nobody, people in the kitchen didn't give a shit what's happening in the dining room.
No.
Right?
No.
Like, we didn't care. It was more of a fight. Yeah. It was like front of the house, back of the house.
Yeah, there was
a
real line.
And, those things are better today our industry, right? It's a more of an understanding. It's more of a equality. That only happens if you're able to take a step back and look, I think that's the most important thing. I don't think of it as a mistake. Even when I make what everybody else would consider a mistake.
Right.
And of course, we all do stupid shit. Right.
Yeah, but if you don't end up in jail or, there are certain things you can do that you're like, that didn't work out.
Yeah.
But
what can I do from that?
Interesting. Is that something that you grew up with? Where did that come from?
I don't know. I think part of it is
self-taught, honestly. Wisdom and...
Well, first of all, I'm not very educated. Let's just be clear, right? I barely made it out of high school.
Can you read? You can read, though.
It's funny. My wife just asked me if I'm dyslexic.
Really?
And so that's something I'm going to be looking into because I was never great at school, or I didn't care about school.
Right.
I started cooking at 14 years old, and I knew what I wanted to do.
That was it.
And so whether that gave me an outlet to not pay attention to school, great. But either way, it wasn't my specialty, right? So here I am, not very educated from a traditional sense.
Okay.
Right? And having to figure things out on my own. And I'll give you a great example. Like, I'm really good with numbers.
Yeah.
But if you ask me how to do math, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Right? I know how smart you are.
But I do everything in metric. I do, I do the what I think makes sense for our industry.
Right.
But at the same time, I still do it in a backwards way because I don't know the formalized route to get to the answer.
Does that matter anymore? Don't we teach math differently these days now?
I'm sure we do. I hear about this Common Core,
but
just give
you a calculator.
But at the same time, that made me figure stuff out that I never would have, if somebody just hand fed me information, that wouldn't have allowed me to struggle through the things that I struggled and learn from.
Did you? Sorry. Let me. This is a wildly off the cuff and crazy. You don't have to answer anything you don't want to answer. Is religion a thing in your life, and is a lack of religion something that plays a part there, like consequence and guilt of consequence of your choices or something, like, you know what I'm saying? Like a life of, I wonder about that. Like,
is there a higher,
are you like, yo, I'm thing. Not worried about going to hell because I don't believe in God, so who gives a shit? Like, I'm just going to find the best way through, or I'm not worried about, I don't know. I wonder about that.
I would say as I get older, I care, or I want to know more about the foundation of things. Right. I think as you see this industry grow with chefs, they go from culinary school to having, you know, possibly the number one restaurant in New York City. Or, you know, not to say that, right. You know, they didn't put in time, but they didn't put in time like us.
Nope.
Because it's quicker, it's faster, it's easier, you know. But are they losing something? You know, does somebody actually know out there that's not our age that borscht is not a beet puree?
Yes.
Right? But how many how many borscht have we served in our lives that are beet puree? But at the end of the day, it's actually beef stew with beets.
Right.
So, you know, it's so misguided. And I think that's where I go, right? I want to understand the foundation to be able to make those decisions. You know, so it's about educating myself.
Yeah.
Right? Am I a religious person? I would say no from a moral or logical standpoint, right? I think there's things that have happened definitely recently in my life that can't be explained unless it's, you know, Elon Musk is...
unless God's punishing you? What do you mean? Unless I didn't tie.
No, there's but Catholic at the same guilt, there's Jewish guilt. Right. There's all sorts of guilt going on.
Absolutely, but at the same time. My wife is Jewish, right? Yeah. She was kosher until last year.
Wow.
My daughter, we're raising Jewish. And so that allows me to understand the basis of Judaism, which is really interesting. Cool.
Yeah,
that's really also covering your bases because you're right. Like, you know, there's no hell with those guys. Yeah. It's going to be all right.
Yeah, as long as...
Happy Passover, brother. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you. We cooked Passover Seder. Dinner. I made a Seder plate.
I love the Seder ritual. I actually really love the rituals of Judaism. I just think it's a wonderful thing because so much happens at the table.
Yeah. And
so much happens at the table.
I kind of think it's either are you an eye for an eye guy or are you a turn the other cheek kind of person. And I'm a big fan of the first book, but the sequel for me really is...
But wait,
I'm interested
in why you asked Nate that question. Is it because he seems like he has so much faith in himself?
Yeah, the confidence and the faith in yourself. And it's like after all these years, it's not... Most people that project the confidence that you project, it comes from a place of deep insecurity. But in your case, you're genuinely not afraid to just try something. And I am not that way. And I've... always been a little jealous, like looked at you and been like, how come he can get away with that and I can't? You know, like when I do it, someone's like, you're a cocky asshole. And when he does it, they're like, oh, he tried that out. And that's something that's really special and unique that I know a lot of people have kind of looked at you for that. And we all are like, I don't understand.
I could also tell you why. Right. As I keep getting older, I keep evolving and I start shedding the things that don't matter to me in my life. The things that matter to me are my family. I think you know how important my son is, Oliver, how important my daughter, who's two, which her name
she's
is Poppy.
Right outside. And she's adorable.
And my wife, Rachel. Rachel gives me that confidence even more than what I had. Right. I mean, sure, we all come from a point of insecurity when, you know, as we are evolving and growing. But can you focus on those things and can you have a supporting cast around you that supports those decisions, right? I, you know, cooking and food, most important beyond family, you know, I'm sorry, most important to me is family. Second is cooking and food. But, you know, I've been so fortunate to be able to also see things outside of those, you know, that industry and those two things that have allowed me to grow, right? I don't know if you know this, but Daniel's mother... was teaching me drawing and art, and that gave me such a passion to understand that.
That's amazing.
Right? But it also, what I understood is it gave me an outlet to kind of forget about the things that, you know, maybe aren't amazing.
Right.
Right? As we get older, our health affects us.
Sure.
You know, I have severe tinnitus. Tinnitus is constant ringing of the ears.
When did that start?
Oh, years ago. But I think it's from working in kitchens.
Yes.
Right? We had the worst hood systems. We had the loudest equipment. I mean, how long did you stand in front of a blender?
You're talking about that.
And so I have severe tinnitus. Luckily, I don't have hearing loss. But
I'm hoping that stays that way for both of us. So right now, do you have
a ring in your ears?
Oh, it's so loud right now.
Really?
Yes. I hear it too.
But, you know,
I hear mine. Yeah.
You can probably hear mine. You know, the other day, I was with Poppy outside, and we have this kind of concrete wall outside our house, and we were, you know, using chalk, which she calls cock. And I think that's amazing. And, you know, for that whole 45 minutes or an hour, I forgot about it.
Right.
And the doctors tell you it's mostly psychological.
Really?
Yeah. And that right there kind of cued me into like maybe. But at the same time.
I hear it right now.
Yeah. At the same time, we worked in kitchens and our ears are damaged and, you know.
I think I just got superior genetics.
Yeah. Nothing. No. Loud kitchens, loud music. I mean, I just think New York City for me is a loud place that I've lived in for a very long time.
Really?
You know, and it's happened. But
is this a common thing that you've heard? Have you spoken to a bunch of people? Is it the common thread amongst kitchen folks?
No. But, you know, I've spent more time in kitchens than I have outside of kitchens. And so it's the one thing that I can think of. Like, you know, you spend 10,000 hours doing something. Yes. It's going to affect you in positive and negative ways.
I think at Online Podcast, we should, you think about the Mirepoix, like the different areas of the world and the folks that are like, you know, God, guns, and country, and there's carrots, onions, and celery, and you are family, food, and...
Now in my life?
Yeah.
Helping others.
Yeah.
But not for my benefit. Right, I had a conversation.
Family, food, and philanthropy.
I don't even know if it's philanthropy. I think it's just helping guide people that are in similar situations.
It's like you're paying it forward.
Right? Do you remember Ross Wunderlich, who worked for you at SBQR?
He
worked
at A16.
He worked for Daniel. And he's been at a restaurant group in San Francisco for the last 10 years. And he's at that point. He's like, what do I do?
You know,
do I go another 10 years? Or do I... find something new. And so I had a whole conversation, you know, we laid it out, but that wasn't for my benefit.
Right.
You know, it was to say, hey, I've been through that. I've seen that. And here's some options to think about. You know, most people you touch on it, get lazy, right? I'm not saying him, but
we talk about that in here a lot,
right?
Yes.
A 10-year-old restaurant,
a path.
Yeah. There's going to be lazy things that happen at restaurants that become standards. Right. And can you as an individual after 10 years, come out of that and start telling people, oh, actually, you know what? I've been a lazy asshole for the last 10 years. Not Ross. But then course correct. It takes a special person to be able to do that.
It also takes a special person to say, I need help. I need advice. Because I think a lot of us in this industry have a big ego and we don't want to say we don't know how. We don't want to say, hey, can you help me? Like, and that's why I've always connected with you, because I could be super honest with you and, you know, be like, this is kind of fucked up, isn't it? And Nate would be like, yeah, this is kind of a fucked up situation. You know, like we'd be doing like these cooking competitions on television and be like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Like, you know, sometimes you got to check in with somebody and be like, is it me or is this not an okay scenario? Or is this me and I just don't know how to deal? You know, there's been so many times in my career where I've asked you questions about like, is this right? Is this uncool? Am I doing the right thing? You know, like, and I think it's good to have somebody to bounce stuff off of.
And that advice could change from day to day, depending on the situation.
Of course. But like paying it forward once you have experience, I think is really worthwhile. Even if you get nothing out of it, like you're saying, we were talking to John and Vinny about path because, you know, we're talking about, is there a path to retirement? You know, there's no gold watch in our industry. There's no retirement. Like there is no
5 years for me.
Right.
5 years from today.
You have
I'm
to
out.
Make it up on your
what
own.
What does
though.
That mean? What does that mean amount?
You have to make it up on
I'm
your
gonna
own.
I'm going to retire in 5 years.
You're making your own retirement. I'll have to make my own. Dan will have 100%. To make his own. There's no corporate laid out path for you in this industry. And it changes constantly.
Yeah.
It's changed constantly over the years.
We're
and
like
so,
washed up subpar athletes.
Yes. But without any agents or coaches saying, okay, now you're going to do this and now you're going to do that. It's like you really have to reinvent yourself constantly.
You do.
Reassess.
You do. But you also have to be able to recognize when you need to.
Yes.
Right? And that's when, you know, I start questioning the things about religion or is there a higher power, right? I'll give you an example. I used to weigh 250 pounds. You know this.
Oh, and my God. We were fighting for a long time, and I kept the picture because it's really it's
I used to weigh 250 pounds. And before my son was born, I was like, you know what? I'm going to change. And I started running.
How much do you weigh now?
178.
Okay. You didn't lose your sense of humor. You didn't lose your sense of humor, watching. Though.
No, and, you know, fast forward 3 years after I got healthy and I got fit, my son had a heart condition. And imagine if I was in the same fat, lazy position that I was, I wouldn't have been able to be the father I am and be the one who is feeding him correctly,
right,
is making him go outdoors, is making him work for maniacs like Daniel. You know, without that, I don't.
But you
think
also
anything would
happen. you got. I mean, you have to acknowledge like you're extraordinarily lucky because you have the something special, the discipline or drive or intelligence to recognize and do this. Like, I think that human beings don't realize that, you know, we're all dealt a set of cards. And like, man, for all the misfortune, you've been so fortunate to have that ability.
Luck. I didn't want to use the word luck.
Yeah.
But it probably is. There's a lot of luck.
You have the luck to be insightful enough to know what's going on. You have the luck to have the work ethic. And like, people are like, oh, it's discipline and hard work and pull up yourself up by your bootstraps. But I guarantee that if the homeless guy had the discipline to do it, he would. It's not, he's like, nah, you know, I got the discipline to be a millionaire. I prefer to, like, you know, shit on the street.
Yeah, but what are we doing to change that? Right.
That's
like
our
my
job.
Family and I, we make food for homeless people.
Right.
Now, sometimes there are situations that
they don't want to take
deserve
your food.
It in quotes.
Or they
right?
don't want to take your food.
No, but I saw a guy, right, eat shit in shit last week. Right. That's amazing, first of all.
I mean, that's art.
Yeah.
So
I mean, having the perfect texture.
Was it Banksy?
Having the perfect texture to write eat shit. I thought it was amazing.
This is in San Diego.
San Diego, everyone.
Beautiful,
San Diego.
Sunny San Diego.
Yeah.
Soft serve. We call it soft serve.
So, yeah. That's,
wait, but
that's
I we also have to talk about the fact that you... Okay, everybody has their insecurities. Yes, yeah. We know how confident you are. But, like, you have the perfect thing that you do to people in the kitchen. You've done it to me. You've done it to probably Dan. When somebody's doing something and they're so focused and they're trying something out.
The way you're going to do that?
And Nate will look over their shoulder and say, you going to do it that way?
Is that the way you're going to do that?
Is that the way you're going
to
do
sure
that?
You sure you want to do that way?
And it is the most jarring thing. It is the thing that is like... You're already, because you know you can relate. You're already questioning yourself. As a chef, we're fucking perfectionists, and we want to do it right, and we're trying to figure something out, and you're in the middle of that creative process, and Nate comes over and says, are you going to do it that way? And you're like, no, oh my God, no. Is it right? Is it wrong?
Yeah,
like,
but it doesn't mean it's right or wrong.
I know,
it means get out of your head
right,
and
have
fun.
That's the voice in the head. That's the voice in the head.
Serious?
You know?
Kitchens are serious, and
kitchens
they should
are
be.
Serious.
They should be, right? From a food safety standpoint, from feeding people standpoint.
Right. You don't want to make anybody sick.
Food is medicine.
Yes.
You know, it should be serious. But also, it's kind of shitty work. So it should be fun. that's
I mean, it is. I mean, when, like, I talk a lot about the beginning, right? We went into it. We were chefs or pastry chefs. That was it. And when I started, it was really considered blue-collar labor. You know, it was European chefs that were doing it. At a high regard.
Is it not considered that anymore? I'm pretty sure it's still blue collar labor. I mean,
remember that we're a protected class from ChatGPT.
Yeah, so we're good.
Right now.
But Sherry Yard is going to change that because she's arguing with ChatGPT every day. but you know, yes, of course it is blue collar labor still, but it's been glamorized. And it's been televised, and it's become a huge industry everybody wants in.
The
I mean, we're in Los Angeles.
That drives me crazy because it should be glamorized for being blue-collar labor. And you should love peeling a carrot because there is something special about the relationship that you have to yourself when you are excellent at your craft. And blue-collar labor and glamour shouldn't be mutually exclusive. Like, if you don't love doing it, then you should do something else.
Yeah.
You shouldn't try and make it into something that it isn't.
Like, or find the thing in the industry. Like, if you're passionate about the industry, find the thing. Because now we have the opportunity. Like you said, you used to be a chef, sous chef, pastry chef, line cook, dishwasher. Yeah. Done.
That was
you
it. Know?
Now options you can be social only. Media star. You can be on YouTube. You can be on every platform there is and make way more money than we ever have.
Yeah, you can be a cookbook author. Right. You can be an artist. You can be a product maker. I mean, come on. And now, okay, so we have to talk about
you. Or you could just make pizza and still be broke. Pizza. Which is another option. Which he sent his son to work at the pizzeria, so, you know. It's
I could look at your financials if you want, because I have taught myself about how to run a business.
I'm on the Donald Trump tax plan. Wow. So you can look at my financials, but that's because I didn't have to pay any taxes because I didn't make any cash.
Well, is there hush money involved in that?
No, there's no Stormy, nothing.
Long neck.
Back to my accountant who was scared of me. She's amazing. We shouldn't discuss in details why she's amazing.
Right.
But man, she's amazing this year.
Really?
Yeah.
But God, we learned from everybody. Like, you know, we learned how to be our own accountants, our own schedulers, our own graphic designers when you make menus. You know, you have to learn all this shit.
We learned how to build studios in our house and use them for our LLCs to run through and then get tax breaks.
Chefs are resourceful. I've said it once, I'll say it again. But, you know, now you have some life changes, you know, and you have...
Big life changes.
You're moving out of this country. This is an exclusive only
here. You're
an
America guy. You love America. That's not, right?
Oh, like every day when I... First of all, is back up, right?
California.
California is, for me, paradise. It's the most special place in the world. It has the best produce.
I went to the farmer's market this morning.
Best produce, worst taxes, a lot of bad people. But at the end of the day, I want to be here more than anywhere in the world.
Nice.
Right? I've had some big life changes recently from a health standpoint. Right? I spent the last 2 years... fixing my body, really. I had to have shoulder surgery from working in kitchens, right? I had, you know, the ears, my jaw had, I've started developing whatever it's called, like...
TMJ?
Not only TMJ, but like my jaw was out of alignment for years, because when you work in kitchens, you're so pinned up in the
clench.
You're just clenching your teeth the whole time. And that just becomes habit. And then you spend your whole life gritting your teeth at people.
I think that's another tinnitus reason. But go on.
Well, also, which led to the shoulder, because my jaw was slightly ajar for years, which made me slightly lean forward just by that little bit of weight. Hurt my shoulder while working in kitchens, caused me to do that. Fast forward, you know, to this year, I was at my house one morning just drinking a little coffee, and I had a seizure. I've never had a seizure before in my life, and I dropped to the floor, I guess. I bit off about, I'd say, 20% of my tongue.
Oh, my God.
And I woke up with a bunch of guys standing over me, seeing if I was okay.
I can't believe this happened.
Yeah, I've never experienced anything like that. And then it continued. It still continues.
What does that mean, it continued?
So, you know, I'm under... the best care. I have a neurologist. I have a doctor. I have everything you can have, right?
Don't you also have like a doctor Another scientist good thing about wife?
California. Oh, yeah. My wife also has a PhD. So if any of the doctors out there says something stupid,
you're like, I'm not educated. That's
all I'm even doing. But my wife graduated first in her class at Caltech with a PhD. And so she questions
them. You put together a good team.
Yes. So, and then I went on medicine right away, but I continued to have seizures and ended up biting another chunk of my tongue out the next month.
As a chef, you're biting pieces of your tongue off. Yeah, it's scary.
That's so scary.
The irony of life.
Then it continued. Ugh. And even 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're taking medication.
Yes. And so I am, but the medications are so strong, you have to work up. Right,
it takes months
to work up to the right levels, because I started on one medicine, not
you can't
to
just
get
pop a pill and be okay.
Right,
but you're not. But I thought the medication messes with your brain, but you're very lucid and completely communicative, and like, so you're not. It's not messing with your sense of reality.
Oh, it is.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So I continue to have seizures. I ended up like I said, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
When you have epilepsy, you're not supposed to drive, right?
This doesn't sound like a... Wait a second.
Wait, but this is a PSA. Don't drive if you have...
PSA, do not drive unless you have a fully auto Tesla. Thank you, Elon Musk. You saved my life.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. So...
I don't think you're supposed to... We shouldn't... We shouldn't cut it, but...
No,
I can... I'll say it, but I think it. That's really true.
Yeah, so I remember... So once I started getting healthy from after my seizures, I injured my back. And so I got a personal trainer and I started working out 4 days a week. And I started getting physically healthy. And I tend to do things a little harder than others. And so, you know.
Would you say you're an extremist?
Yeah. So yeah.
You have an addictive personality and you're addicted to healthy things, which is positive.
Yeah. Thank God I stopped drinking alcohol the day I turned 18.
Oh my God.
Let that sink in.
The day you turned 18.
Yeah. Wow, 18. But anyways, I was driving down the highway.
You never had a legal drink in his life.
Yeah, never. Yeah. Driving down the highway, I remember thinking, you know what? I don't use the auto drive that often. I should probably put it on. Tick, tick. Two clicks. Next thing I know, I'm getting pulled out of my car. I was on the highway. The car was perfectly parked in front of a coffee shop in a parking space. And someone called 911 because I was having a seizure.
On the Line podcast is brought to you by Freitag Cocktails. I'm so excited about these. Freitag, that's me. Friday in German, hello. Friday's a great day for a cocktail. We make them in a family-owned distillery in San Diego. Chef-crafted cocktails, our own bitters, our own vermouth. We make Manhattan, Negroni, Margarita. What else could you ask for? Go to freitagcocktails.com, order them today, and they'll be delivered to your door. Cheers!
What?
So I got to the hospital eventually.
How?
I don't know. I tried to read the police report. So I got to the hospital, had a few more seizures.
I have a Romanian wife. If I had done that, she would have killed me. Yeah. For sure, she would beat the... I mean, that is so scary.
Yeah, and so I went home and then kept having seizures all night. The same guys that came over the first time I had a seizure came back.
Wow.
They were like, hey, what's up?
you know all the EMTs.
Yeah, I know them all now. And it turns out in the state of California, which one thing I'm not sure I like about California, is even if you're not necessarily the most lucid person and you have five guys standing over you, including fire trucks, you can tell them to get out of your house and they have to.
Yeah, that's why these folks that are killing themselves on drugs on the street, when you're like, yo, man, this guy needs help. And they're like, he's like, don't, I don't want your help.
What if you're saying that
help.
And you don't know what you're saying?
I didn't. But some reason I didn't have Rachel as my proxy. And so she couldn't do anything. And I wasn't in a place to tell them no. And I probably should have been in the hospital. But to answer your question, am I lucid? Yes, I have moments. I've lost chunks of time.
Wow.
Like...
Obviously, if you were driving and then all of a sudden your car was pulled over.
No, I'm sorry. I mean, I've lost chunks of my life. Chunks of time throughout my life.
Oh, memories.
But not
God,
only
I've got
that.
So many embarrassing stories from your childhood I'd love to share with you.
Remind him.
I'm going to remind you.
That's what friends are for.
And even if you don't think they're true, I promise you they're true.
I mean, I ordered from the same restaurant 3 weeks in a row thinking it was my first time. And every time I was like, Rachel, we got to try that new spicy Lao place. She's like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So it is affecting me in that way. But I have great help. I have, I'm in a pretty good mental state. I'm on medication. The medication should have been working.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm an extremist,
yes.
My metabolism was eating up the medicine too fast, dropped below therapeutic levels, and that's how I ended up having a seizure.
Wow.
So from 2 weeks ago, now you're regulated into a better place.
Currently, yes.
And
yes.
Path forward, like, you got like another 6 weeks to live or you're going to be fine forever? Or?
I think I'll be fine forever. But if I'm not, you know.
6 weeks to live.
I just want to make sure that if this is like an exclusive last interview that we, you know, acknowledge
and then
that
Oliver
and say thank you.
Is going to be your responsibility after that.
Oh,
a spiritual father. I went to Godfather school. I went to church, Filipino Godfather school as a Jew. It was not even a joke. It was a Catholic Godfather school I had to go to. I sat around. I've done this twice, by the way.
I've never heard of Godfather school.
It's Godfather school. If you want to be a Godfather, you have to go to Godfather school.
This was in San Francisco.
I'm sorry.
I asked Daniel to be the Godfather of Oliver before he was born.
Somebody made that up. Did they take money from you?
I had to go to Catholic church.
We had to go to Catholic school.
And everybody sits around. They're like, I want to be the spiritual father for this and the whole thing. And I'm like, I'm a Jew. I don't believe in God. Like, angry agnostic atheist, like no, but yeah, why? But the greatest part about it, so then I did it again because my godfather, my brother's son, and his wife's Filipino, and I had to go to Godfather school, but this time I knew what I was doing. So
okay,
I went to the closest
Godfather,
instead
by
of
the way.
Going to the Filipino church.
We have a well-educated
seriously. I went to the Catholic church around the corner from my house, which was Latino, and they did the whole thing in Spanish. I didn't speak Spanish. At the end of the thing, they were like, "Do you have any questions?" I was like, what does parabla mean? Because you keep on saying that. The word of God, apparently. And so, yeah, I've done it twice.
See, I'm heading that off early. Poppy, she's only two, but she's already in a...
Well, she's Jewish.
Spanish-Jewish.
Fantastic.
Yeah, 100%. She
speaks, I love it.
Yeah, so when she gets angry at me, she just looks at me, waves her finger, says, no gracias.
No gracias.
Like, no gracias. That. Okay. Wow.
What like a, what a, what a, so do you think that this shift in your health is... Yo, it's just a bump in the road. I'm continuing, or is it another opportunity like with your son when you're like, okay, let me reassess what's important and make a shift, or?
Yeah, which is difficult at this age, right? We're setting our ways, right? Yes. Even though we're evolving, but at the same time, we can evolve in professional lives differently than we can in our personal life.
That's
a lot. And so now I would say... That's a struggle because I love working, I love food, I love doing all these things, but at the same time, I have a family. And imagine my daughter, Poppy, being 2 years old, not growing up with the best version of me.
Right.
Because I think that's where I'm getting. You know, I'm getting the best. I apologize to Oliver, you know, and I'm getting better, bud. But, you know,
wow.
I don't know. It's something that I think about a lot.
I'm pretty sure Oliver loves you for who you are and as the whole time. You know what I mean? And the way you've always been. Because you're an amazing dad, and you've been an amazing dad to him the whole time.
There's something that I'm not understanding here. Sorry. I'm like deeply philosophical, and I'm like wildly off base because we're supposed to be talking about like fried chicken. But
no.
You like honey on your fried chicken? Jalapenos. I hate that hot chicken. Nashville hot chicken.
Same.
Season your chicken. Jesus
Same.
Christ. It's just spicy and disgusting. What
Stay
are you trying to do? Just burn
Stay
me for no reason?
Why would
horrible
you take something crispy and put oil on it?
And it's so spicy. Anthony Bourdain said Nashville hot chicken is a 3-day commitment. Because one day to eat and 2 days to... It's a disaster.
Accurate.
Anyway, so speaking of hot chicken, there's this thing about you where you're like, no regrets, but... learning from the past and deeply insightful when it comes to moving forward. And there's something that I keep on coming back to here where I'm like, normally people are like, I regret that thing I did in the past, so I want to shift it for the future. But for you, you're like, yeah, I did that I don't regret it, but I would like to do it differently.
Yeah, and that's that's where vulnerability comes in. Yes. And I think vulnerability is one of the last things that chefs, especially ego-driven maniacs, can actually
benefit from. Yeah.
And I think it's having the right people around you, being vulnerable. I mean, I'll tell you guys, I love you guys, I cry, you know, twice a week, you know, whether it's for happy reasons or sad reasons, but I'm okay with that.
Yep.
And it's okay being vulnerable and learning from those experiences.
When was sorry. I didn't cry from the time I was 14 years old. I never shed a tear.
Of course, because you started working at La Bernadette.
It was 6 months after my father passed away. I was sitting on the plane flying to Los Angeles, and I was watching some TV, some movie, and the kid's dad died. I started crying like...
Yeah.
And the lady next to me on the street, I think I was watching like Where's Waldo the Animated Movie or something. Like, it was really bad.
There's something about
and
movies
I was
on
just,
a plane that make you cry.
I mean, when did you start crying?
I mean, I don't know if it's when, but I think the important part is like just understanding that it's okay, right? Understanding that, man, we go through a lot of shit in our lives, right? You know, my daughter is a maniac. She's a maniac. And but she's also the most loving, beautiful, sweet, cute girl there is.
But I've seen a change in you ever since you've had her. I mean,
there's, you know, love you, Ollie, but you're a boy.
Yeah.
You know, having a daughter is something completely different, right? And it's all I ever wanted. You know, you were around. I wanted a little girl and I think it's the dichotomy or the contrast of like our lives.
Yes.
Of what we were, what we spent, and then I had this cute little thing on the, you know, at home, and I that is the most special thing to me, and oh man, she's special.
Yeah, the way you talk about her, it's something special, something different in you. I see that, and before it again, it was even something to be talked about. Most of your kitchens were probably 60-75% women.
Thank you for recognizing.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I couldn't help it because I came up in this industry as, you know, somebody who didn't have kitchens full of women, which I didn't mind, actually. I loved being part of the guys, you know.
Oh, because you grew up in the 90s and there weren't. Yeah. That many of you in kitchens.
Not at all. Yeah, and so. I also love that you recognize that women had a particular attention to detail as chefs, a particular way of cooking and of being in a kitchen.
I think that's absolutely correct. And you know, I'm not sure if anybody's ever really verbalized that or recognized that. But yeah, my kitchens were always full of females.
Yeah.
For specific reasons. And it was because I had to deal with guys' egos. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wait a minute. The important thing is about what we're feeding the people. And you're letting yourself get in the way of that. Where I take somebody that is not only has a delicacy to them, has a desire, has a want, gets, you know, doesn't have an ego, and wants to do great and feed people.
Yep.
Right? It's in their nature. People. It's about feeding people. Well, they're the ones that feed our babies.
What's fascinating to me about that ego-driven chef world that we used to live in, it's changing a lot now, it's still there, obviously, is that anything that you would look up to, Italian cuisine, Persian cuisine, you know, any cuisine, there'd be a woman in the kitchen. You know, all these famous chefs, French, Italian, whatever, would say in these interviews, how did you get to where you got? Oh, my mother, my grandmother. You know, it was always a woman that was influencing them. You know, and I don't pull the female card. You know me, I never have. But it's a study in my mind to see that, to listen to that. Whenever men talk about it, and we see a lot of contestants and chefs come on Chopped, and you know they talk about their moms or their aunts or that woman in their life that influenced them and taught them how to cook. And that comes from women. And I think it's a different kind of a tribe in a kitchen when it's a female tribe.
That's cool. I mean, some of the best food came from my grandma.
There you go.
I mean, you know.
There you go.
That I remember to this day.
But, and again, and that will change because now in your family, historically, the kids will look back and say, you know, my dad was the best cook. My dad taught me about food.
They don't think I'm the best cook, by the way.
Well, you are. I don't know. Does Rachel cook?
The food that you cook on and you put on your Instagram, that looks beautiful.
And so I had a friend over the other night and I cooked for him. And he was like, is this how you normally do it? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, is this how you normally cook for your family? And I was like, yeah. And it just caught me off guard because I was like, it seemed pretty regular. I mean, you know, I mean, regular as in
Nate, I cooked regular.
Mexican food with the Southern California ingredients and I had to focus on those.
Yes. Yeah, well, I will say just as like a real, just we don't educate people how to cook in America. It's not part of the thing. We don't, you know, the lunch is a recess in school, our lunch period, and instead of an educational period, so we don't teach our kids how to feed themselves, how to cook for themselves, take care of themselves. And that learning how to cook is the greatest gift you can give yourself, period. Cooking is not a chore. If you just knew how to chop an onion, it's like it doesn't take time. It's easy.
It's actually survival.
It's like the fact that's that true. People don't know how to do it, and the fact that we've been, you know, programmed by people that are trying to sell us shit to not learn that they did it purposefully, not learn because they want to sell us stuff is shameful. Yeah. And like when people are like, oh my God, you cook like that? It's like, oh my God, that took me 9 minutes. Like, I just sliced right. it up and threw it on the broiler. I didn't do anything.
What I always loved about the way you brought Oliver up was, you know, other kids just, oh, I want mac and cheese and chicken nuggets. And that was never offered.
It wasn't an option.
Right. So I think that's really interesting for parents to hear that about food and kids.
But you also have to understand he's 17. And right. all he wants is chicken tenders now, and french fries and burgers and pizza. And
back then, when he was 5, 6, 7 years old,
yeah,
he was
I used eating to make what him, you made. I mean, I remember when he was 5, I made him oatmeal with blue cheese and maple one day because that's what he asked for. You know, like, you're gross, but okay, here we go.
But you know, there's no option, right?
Listen to this. So my brother's kids during COVID, I took the lunch shift. I made them lunch every single day. And I would make them whatever I felt like making. I made them borscht one day. And, you know, they're at the time 4 and 6 years old. They were like, this is delicious. They ate it. They didn't even question it. There was no thought about it. They just ate it. Uncle Daniel cooks, I eat. And then as soon as you would introduce another person in the room and yep. there was optionality, ew, I don't like that. That's disgusting. I want this. And as soon as they had that, and it's the power of being able to choose and being in a position where you get to manipulate, all of a sudden you're learning how to do like it is. If your kids are not eating well, it's your fucking fault.
You're looking at the camera right now.
Yeah. If the kids are not eating well, it's your fucking fault, all right? Don't give them those goddamn choices. Feed them good food, and I promise you they'll enjoy it. Sorry, yeah. Did I say
no,
that out
loud? No, I mean, I think
God bless you. I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about this, but as an expert, speaking on behalf of women.
As a food expert, speaking on behalf of women. Yeah. Wow. Sorry. Are you trying to hide right now?
Yeah, I'm running away.
You should be.
No, but I always found that really interesting. It's about what you present, and that you know there's a bigger conversation around food in this country, but that we can talk about. But speaking of this country,
yes,
you're going to be leaving us.
Yeah, so a lot of life changes as we have discussed. You know, I have a 2-year-old daughter. I have a 17-year-old son. I have a beautifully amazing wife who happens to be the most educated person I know and is incredibly smart. And that has been something that has been so amazing because I have been sick. I have had these health issues.
Right.
And then just it allowed me to reevaluate life. So, you know, this is an exclusive. I haven't told anybody this.
Can you talk about it?
We can talk.
Can you say it? I mean, this will air a couple
Maybe you
weeks.
Could just do the accent.
Crikey. I can't.
Crikey. Can you say throw another shrimp on the Barbie?
Throw another shrimp on the Barbie.
Let's just leave it there.
My family are and I are packing up and we're moving to Australia.
Wow. Down under.
Congratulations. Yeah. Wow. Congratulations.
Oliver is going to finish high school in Australia.
No way.
Yeah. Poppy is going to have an accent. And
that's amazing. What an incredible
Spanish,
opportunity.
Spanish, Jewish, Australian.
Australian, yeah. Wow. She loves kangaroos.
Oh, who so doesn't? And koalabies, those little ones?
Yeah.
Little
but I'm not an outback kind of guy. The steakhouse or the actual outback.
You know about the spiders down there, by the way?
I've heard.
Yo.
I'm going to be living in a high rise in Sydney. Stop.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
Don't stop.
He'll be fine. Yeah. Don't worry. Spiders at least
wow,
worries. Okay, so you're completely relocating to the other side of the world.
The other side of the world. I'll be in the future if you think about it.
Yes.
Have you been to Burnt Ends restaurant, by the way? Have you been to Burnt Ends restaurant?
I haven't been to Burnt Ends.
Okay, well, now that you're going to be over there, go to Burnt Ends. It was one of my favorite meals of my life.
Yeah, a few months ago, I did go to Sydney and I visited Josh Nyland's.
Oh my God, place. What a dream. Was it as
Saint
good
Peter.
As it looks?
Oh my God.
So we are on in Sydney, Australia. Yes. So people are listening. Tell us about this restaurant.
Josh Nyland. Island, like he is the fish master. Like he knows more about fish. He's worked in some of the best kitchens around the world, and now he has multiple restaurants specializing in seafood, but doing it from a different point of view. Mm. You know, every kitchen, including the esteemed Le Bernardin that you came working in, you know, you'd get a fish, you'd bring it in, you'd butcher it, you'd wash it, and then you'd serve it.
Right.
Josh Nyland, as soon as the fish comes out of the water, it never touches water again.
Never touches water again.
Yeah, so it never gets washed. It never gets, damaged. I mean, it is handled like it is the most precious thing in the world because that's how much he cares about fish. So it's a lot of dry aging. It's a lot of really cool butchering techniques that, you know,
have you not seen his cookbook? Like, if you go on his Instagram, it's
incredible.
Spectacular.
If it has the dry aging on it, I've seen it.
He cuts the, he's the guy that's like, yo, I made a rib chop of fish with the rib sticking out that's been beautifully butchered and clean. And man, with the fried fish.
With amazing texture. And, you know, when we cook fish, when you microwave fish at your house.
Which I do, frozen.
I'm not joking.
It's in my cookbook. There's a recipe for it. I used to microwave a fish at La Bernardin. You know that? I was famous for that. I actually convinced the chef to fully cook a... Can I tell the story real quick?
Probably, you don't want to tell the story.
No, moving on. There was a fish that was wrapped in cabbage, Savoy cabbage leaf, and it was scallops, Savoy cabbage, foie gras, black truffles. It was cod at the time, actually. Then they moved to scallops. And we had a steamer basket. It was an appetizer, and it was a 12-minute pickup appetizer. And every time I would cut it, it was undercooked every single time. And I would run. The only place there was a microwave was in the pastry department. So I would run to the pastry department and be like, Florian Belanger, do you think I can use your microwave, please, sir? And then I would throw it in the microwave, boop, boop, and I would get it. And then I would go out. And then finally I was like, yo, this is ridiculous, man. I got to microwave this fish every single time. So no joke, we had it. It was a three-minute pickup. Went from 15 down to 3. Innovator at La Bernardin. I went from the king of the deep sauté, the deep fryer. I deep fried 50 pounds of calamari a day to microwaving cod.
There you have it.
And
I'm moving to Australia.
So talk about Josh, so is it as good as the restaurant?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. He does something special. Anybody who is obsessed as he is with anything, it's going to be special.
Right. Can he afford to run that as a restaurant? I mean, is it sustainable? Like, how much is it's got to be $1 million, or can you afford? But they get a lot of money down there.
The entree is $1 million.
Well, I think he's probably a smart businessman. He has diverse businesses, right? He has hotel deals. He has his own restaurant. He has kind of a
he's
fast,
a young man,
fast
though.
Casual
he's got
places,
all that going on.
Right, and so he's appealing to many different people.
Wow.
Speaking of fast casual, will that be what you're focused on?
I'm moving to Australia for life. I mean, for my life.
That's right.
Not for life.
Very different healthcare system.
Poor Vita, but not
exactly. Exactly. I'll be working in the food industry, the food space, as always.
Good.
I think as I progress in my career, I find out what I'm really good at. And I know
everything you put your hands on is the
that's
reality.
Not true. It's
every
not
you're
true.
Really good at everything you put your hands on.
If I care about it.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm interested.
Laminated doughs.
I could do it. Let's go.
There you go.
Right. I made burritos last night with a puff pastry. I made a burrito laminated dough. I put a little bit too much vinegar in there. Too much acid firms it up. It's a little too much. But the acid's important.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I like burrito. I'm Jewish.
Yeah, no, I understand.
That's what we eat.
I understand.
That's what we eat. When we're not leavening, we leaven.
Godfather school.
So yeah, so I figured out what I'm good at. And I think that changes all the time, but I know what I'm passionate about, and it's food, people, changing the food industry, coming up with, you know, not relying on techniques that just because.
Right.
Right? You know, if we do that, the industry is going to keep going backwards because a lot of ways we are going backwards. You know, I mean, who's still using open flames? Like, how wasteful is that, right? Just think about things like that, you know? Mm-hmm. Kitchen. How many kitchens have we all worked in where the flame just goes all night long and you put a pan on and off it, right? And so, you know, it's not good enough to serve good food anymore. It's about being sustainable. And so right. I add that in there. It's about finding the greatest ingredients and figuring out how, one, restaurants can afford them, and then helping the producer or farmer grow even bigger.
I mean, there is a big worry about how are we going to feed all these people in this world?
Yeah.
You've been doing that forever. He's been, this guy, with that Urbete chart, you got those guys to do that. And that was the most amazing thing I've ever, it was so delicious. Do you remember that?
Daniel's speaking about Marquita Farms in Northern California, which probably supplied A16 and SBQ, are those restaurants with the most amazing produce. And
he brought seeds back from Italy, and he was like, I want you to grow this for my restaurant.
And they did.
And they did.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And that was on a small scale.
Yeah.
But I've had opportunities to make friends with people like Minsai from Hodo Soy. And because I wanted to use Hodo Soy on a project I was doing with Chipotle called Shop House Southeast Asian Cuisine, which is no longer around, but I wanted to serve the best tofu from the best person that is doing all the right things.
Right.
And back then, he was on a very small scale. Now his food is on every Chipotle. He's in Whole Foods. He's living a great life. But it doesn't stop him. He's on the pursuit of even better. And those are the kind of people you have to find and look for and surround yourself with. The ones that aren't going to get there and stop.
Wow.
Right. Got to keep going.
Japan is
where you need to be.
I was doing a job with Lior for Nestle for Lean Cuisine. And they were talking about like identifying trends for 2 years from now because, you know, we like identified cauliflower a bunch of years back. Like cauliflower is going to be the next trend. So they're like, we need to know 3 years out because we have to grow the cover crop to grow the seed crop because in 3 years, we're going to have to contract for, 28 million pounds of cauliflower.
How can anybody if we want be to sure? put it in a
box. Well, that's why they get these chefs together to go like, yo, what's cool now? Because what you're talking about today is going, we're going to see, and it's accelerating with the internet. So it used to be there was a 5-year, on-ramp lead time. Now it's like 18 months from we say, hey, dino charred and dino kale is cool to we gotta have the farmers contracted growing it.
See, but I think you're looking at this in an old school way because sure, it may take that long for it, right? But it takes a week to get a Barbie item on a menu. Mm. Yeah, a Barbie item on a menu, a food menu.
Mm-hmm.
But you could bang out, like I saw Heinz is doing a pink ketchup.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
So food is not what we think it was or maybe think it is. It's something completely different. It's a different landscape.
Do you think it's all marketing?
I think it's 100% marketing.
Smoke and mirrors,
you want, ladies. You want some controversial thoughts on my end?
Yes, 100%. Bring the controversy.
You want controversy?
Yeah, yeah. I already said I don't believe in God. What
okay, there's a... You're the
godfather to everyone.
Yeah. We're going to keep names out, but there's a very famous restaurateur in New York City.
Mm.
You know him, right? This person recently called out a Lauren Sanchez and said, despicable things about Lauren Sanchez, who is married to Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon.
Yes.
Right? And so I read that and I was like, oh man, why would somebody in a restaurant call out a customer? Fast forward the next day, I was reading the same paper and I'm like, oh, this person's coming out with a book next month.
Next month.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Right. So I tell Rachel, I'm like, hey, I think this is going down. Right. The next day, there's an article in every newspaper in New York, the Post, everything, talking about how somebody released rats in this very famous restaurant.
Yes. I've read that article.
So now think about everybody who never heard of that restaurant before.
Now everybody knows about it.
Because you tried to take down Laura Sanchez or Jeff Bezos, but maybe you didn't. Maybe you just did it for publicity.
Yeah.
Maybe you released your own rats.
Maybe.
What? Right? What are you, you're marketing.
No, don't say that. Don't say that. But what? Yes.
Oh, it's a restaurant. I don't read the paper, so I don't know about really this silly stuff.
Yeah.
But I just think that releasing. I've never released vermin or done anything, but I've definitely been kind of angry and spiteful.
I'm suggesting for your own press.
I get. Oh, they did it to themselves.
For their own press. For their own marketing.
For their own press.
Like,
yeah.
This is all speculation, obviously.
Even bad press is good press.
Well, I'm answering your question. You asked me if it's all marketing.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, even
if it is, that's brilliant.
But food is a lot of even food that's being created by large companies. Is all marketing. And it's just like what you were saying. It's like a dick takes the way we eat.
Sure. But there's good marketing and bad marketing.
Yes, of course. Right?
There's fake marketing. There's real marketing. There's marketing to get your foot in a door to let people try the great things that you're going to do. And maybe you're not there yet.
Right.
But you have a goal and you're going to get there. Right. Maybe your goal is to have a completely clean ingredient restaurant. Right. And you can't do that in one small restaurant. You could do it on scale, but it takes time.
Right.
And so that's my goal.
Time.
I want anything I'm associated with to have clean, good food. And it doesn't have to be fancy because I eat the shit out of French fries. Right? Like, I'll fuck with French fries all day. Also, a cheeseburger, right?
And
or whatever. I'll eat whatever. But like, I would like that beef. I would like to have an impact on the beef industry in a way because, for the last 25 years, I've been talking about total utilization of carcass,
mm-hmm.
right? And we can't get there because the system currently doesn't allow it.
Nope. Well, I was just reading. I think it was Roy. It was Roy Choi talking about in his series Broken Bread. We eat beef, chicken, and pork in this country.
Yeah, because that's the most delicious.
So much beef, chicken, and pork in this country, and no other country in the world eats just concentrated amount of these three proteins.
Yeah,
you know, they diversify their proteins and they eat other things, and that's a huge problem here because they had to exactly.
And we don't.
But there is some marketing behind that as well.
And I mean, we said it earlier, like pigeon, in the turn of the 18th century, pigeon was the number one meat consumed in America, and it was the most popular. And now today, you know, I happen to be a big pigeon guy, squab guy. I'll eat a pigeon. But
I love squab. That's
not the most popular.
It used to be on every
livery.
Menu.
Livery. It's delicious.
Well, what did you have for dinner last night? Chicken livers and mortadella.
Yeah, not joking. I diced up mortadella, and I mixed it with fried chicken liver and Hellman's mayonnaise. It was spectacularly delicious.
Sounds pretty good.
We got to wrap it up.
All right.
We got to wrap it up.
Did we miss anything?
Yeah. A couple things.
Well, I mean, it's important that...
No, I
really want people to understand Daniel and I's relationship. We've known each other since probably 97, 98 something, and we met at culinary school, right? But it was in passing, right? And then after culinary school, I moved to New York City and I showed up at a stage because I wanted to work for Jean-Louis Paladin. Mm. And I went to the kitchen. I was supposed to meet Jean-Louis. He wasn't there, of course. And there was a sous chef named Wiley D.
Wiley Dufresne.
Right? He was a sous chef.
Dufresne.
I just saw him the other day in Vegas. Yeah. He's got a pizzeria. He's great.
Right. Also making pizza.
And he was a sous chef. And guess who else I see in the kitchen? It was only two people. It was this guy.
Daniel.
He must have been like the morning dishwasher. And
who's got two thumbs and loves clarifying consomme?
That guy.
This guy.
Yeah. And I remember I was like such an asshole and such an ego. Like,
you couldn't have been
cocky.
Worse than me.
Yeah, no, I had to be because I remember these two guys being like, oh no, I'll just stick around while, or Jean-Louis will be here in a bit. And I was like, fuck this shit, I'm out. And I left. Think about it, telling Wiley Dufresne to fuck off.
You know about the story with the scallops in that restaurant? Did I tell you ever said with the scallops? I told you this
in the microwave?
No. I had this dish. I was at.
I say we're wrapping it up, Dan always tells another story. Classically.
Oh, it goes further than that. Okay. And then I moved to San Francisco. I moved to San Francisco. I'm working in a kitchen for. This is where my epilepsy comes.
No. The guy that
Laurent Monrique.
I thought it was a pint container guy. Didn't you work for him?
No. We worked. Well, so
we're
I'm working
just talking
for
about
Laurent Monrique, who is a mentor to me, and I can't believe
he's
I
the only
his
person
name, but
I
that
think
is epilepsy. And you know, a couple months into working there, he was like, he's French, and he's like, hey, you know, we got a guy coming from New York. He worked with Alberto Din, and I was like, okay, you know, and then in walks this guy once again. And fast forward all these years, he's Oliver's godfather.
We opened a restaurant together.
Great friend.
We traveled the world together.
Yeah. Oh, that's
true. I've had extraordinary, hysterical, embarrassing
moments.
Do you remember going to that truffle, remember we showed up in our Bermuda shorts and
at a truffle festival?
And Papa Urbani was there and it was like his birthday. And they were like, oh, he's our esteemed guest from America. And he was like, come on.
The head truffle person in the world.
Urbani
we
truffles.
Showed up.
The grandfather's there.
To his 75th birthday.
Unknowingly.
And they brought us
we
in.
We were like in shorts. We were like, oh, what? And they're all,
who
there's like
there?
Nine Italians in suits with like Ferraris.
We showed up. Yeah,
we
Italy.
Showed up. We're
in
like,
Italy,
oh,
you can do whatever.
Oh, right.
No, it was Urbani. It was Chef's Warehouse Urbani. We had a lot of very fun.
So.
Very
fun. And you know, I don't want to forget you because we've known each other a long time as well.
We have.
I probably introduced you guys.
Since 2009.
Is that true?
I bet it is.
Maybe. Yeah.
I have no idea how I know you. I just know you.
And well, I think I introduced you.
I think it was from your restaurant.
You may have introduced me. I remember when I opened the diner, though, I went around the corner to Meatball Shop
that was
to just make sure.
No, but that was a long time
that
after.
Was long time
that was
after.
Most of them.
But we met in 2009.
I loved the diner.
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry that didn't work out.
Sorry, I lost a bunch of money
investing. Yeah, I'm sorry you lost a bunch of money.
Nate, I still love
Nate
you.
Actually supported me, and I love you for it. And I just...
I'm telling the scalp story.
I feel like I
tell the scalp story so I can get out
of
here.
Anyway, no, but Nate and I have bonded during a culinary competition.
Culinary competition.
Yeah, multiple times. Many. In 2009, 2012, and...
Speaking of, I'm retiring from that. It doesn't feed me anymore.
I think you should.
Sayonara.
I think you should. But you're going to be in Australia now.
So. G'day, mate.
G'day, mate.
Oh, I might. So I'm working at
he doesn't care what
I'm saying. I'm telling the scalp story.
He's just going to go ahead and tell the scalp story.
Because I think it's a great story. I love this
great
story.
Great co-host.
Turn off all the
great co-host.
He's amazing. Yeah. He really is.
Oh, fuck.
Do you have a scalp story?
No, I don't. Okay. I got a couple.
Let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you this for being here.
No, it's been amazing.
Nate Appelman on the line, on our podcast.
I only do things I care about. And I care about you. And I care about you.
We care about you.
More than most humans.
And we're excited to see your future.
Thank you. And I want you to succeed. And that's
thank you for having us.
That's
thank
it.
You.
And that's why I'm here.
And so we're so happy you're a part of it.
Thank you.
It means a lot. We know you don't do this for everybody.
No, I don't. And sorry, my phone
will you let me know if
the
toilet's swirling the other direction when you get down there? I've really wondered about that.
So I thought about that and then I forgot to check when I was down there.
All right, well, next time you use the thanks.
He'll write eat shit and send you a picture.
Appreciate it.
Good day, mate.
Wrap it up. Thank
See
you. For
thank you. Woo!
Season 2 of On the Line was recorded in Santa Monica, California at Operation Podcast. Thanks, Chase.
Our engineer and editor is Matthew Donahue. Our theme song is an original composition by John DeLucci. Thanks, Chef.
On the Line is produced by Cindy Augustine. Our co-producer and publicist is Jesse Gerstein.
Our social media and marketing guru is Kedzie Teller.
Thanks for listening
to On the Line.